mornings. I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, it's been hot as a firecracker so far this summer, making pools and other swim spots the most popular place to be. Just be sure to stay water safe while you're splashing around. We'll have some tips. Plus, do you know a hero who had the courage and compassion to step in and help someone in an emergency, not for the recognition, but just because it's the right thing to do? Well, the Red Cross wants to give them the recognition they are due. We'll have details. And you're invited to an old-fashioned All-American 4th of July ice cream social at the Hancock Historical Museum. Sarah Foltz will be here to tell us what's happening. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Monday, July 1st, 2024. We have reached the midway point of 2024, and what have you done with your year so far? It's halfway over, so if you are hoping to accomplish something significant in 2024 and you have not done so yet, then, you know, better get on that, because we are at the midway point. 183rd day of the year, 183 days remaining, so how about that? So, this is big. We have an Olympian from the local area, Bluffton native Trevor Bassett, locked up one of the qualifying spots for the men's 400 meter hurdles, the track and field qualifiers from over the weekend, with the 2024 Summer Olympics quickly closing in. Some of the highlights from over the weekend: Simone Biles will be the oldest female gymnast to represent the U.S. at the Olympic Games since the 1950s. After qualifying for her third Olympic team, she will be joined by Suni Lee, Jordan Chiles, Jade Carey, and Hazley Rivera. Is that how you pronounce it? Hazley Rivera? Is that it? That'll be the women's gymnastics team in Paris. Sydney McLaughlin Levron won the 400-meter women's hurdle final with a world record time. And let's see here. She finished with a time of 50.65 seconds, which was 2 seconds quicker than the second-place finisher. She is the reigning gold medalist in that event. And as we mentioned, Trevor Bassett from Bluffton and Ashland College, I think, University of Ashland, is where he ran in college. But he is one of the three qualifiers for the men's 400 meter hurdles. So pretty cool there. Know who I'll be rooting for in the men's 400 meters. That's pretty cool. Let's see what else is going on. It looks like the summer wave of COVID is here. When are we ever going to stop talking about COVID? Well, probably never. But the summer wave of COVID is here. Last week, the CDC estimated that COVID-19 infections are growing or likely growing across almost all of the United States. So virtually the entire country, we're seeing rising cases of COVID-19, with people gathering for the 4th of July and spending more time indoors to avoid the heat. Now, normally we talk about this in the wintertime, people staying indoors because it's cold, and that becomes a method of spreading all kinds of bugs, from colds to the seasonal flu to COVID and so on. But now it's people gathering inside to avoid the heat. And with all of this going on and the travel week, holiday week ahead, cases are expected to go up even further. But don't worry. Experts are anticipating that the summer COVID wave will remain mild. So nothing to see here, but we definitely want to make sure that we report it in the interest of completeness. So what else is going on? Among the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Monday morning started, as we mentioned, it is the exact middle of the year, and so far, Americans have purchased over 5 million guns in 2024. And actually, that's just through the first 4 months. That isn't even quite through the entire year. 5 million firearms. On Friday, The FBI released new data which found about 5.5 million guns were purchased from January through April of this year, slightly lower than the amount purchased last year. The numbers align with the decreasing trend of gun purchases in the U.S. 2023 saw a 4% decline in total sales compared to 2022, and experts believe that that pattern will continue this year. The peak of firearm sales in this country was during the COVID-19 pandemic year of 2020, peak firearm sales. So, kind of interesting there. Just an interesting factoid there. I'm not sure what to make of this. I was a little, I don't want to say taken aback by this story that I happened to see on the state news wire. But make of it what you will. An image of country music icon Dolly Parton could be appearing on Ohio license plates soon. Dolly Parton on Ohio license plates. State Senator Nikki Antonio has introduced a measure that would establish specialized license plates to benefit Dolly's Imagination Library, which is a most wonderful cause. I mean, we are participating in that in our local area in Hancock County, the Imagination Library, and I think it's terrific. It's just a great program. The program, in case you're not familiar, it sends one free book a month from birth through age five to kids who are registered for the program in an effort to promote literacy. They get one book in the mail every month from the time they're born or when they are registered through the age of five. And the license plates would be available for an additional $25 fee on top of whatever your license plate fee, your normal license plate fee is. They would add an extra $25, and that would go to support the Imagination Library initiative. The legislation is waiting to be brought up for discussion before the Ohio Senate Transportation Committee. So it's not a done deal yet, but the proposal to have Dolly Parton on an Ohio license plate, which I thought is interesting because, as far as I know, Dolly Parton really has no connection to Ohio. None whatsoever. I mean, you know, there are a lot of famous Ohioans. Dolly is not one of them, but she could nonetheless be on one of our license plates soon to promote the Imagination Library. Again, I love the program. I think it's a great program. I'm just, I'm not sure about Dolly on the on Ohio license plates, because I can, I know that, you know, if you travel, a lot of people this week, for example, are going to be traveling, maybe going out of state, and people see that and say, why is Dolly Parton on an Ohio license plate? I can know why is, but on that, I suppose to that point, it could be a conversation starter. You might meet new friends all over the country because people will be stopping you. Why is Dolly Parton on an Ohio license plate, of all things? I don't know. And this was kind of interesting. See what you think about this. I actually think this is a great idea. Now, there has been talk in recent years about creating lab-grown meat. Meat products that don't come from real live living animals, but are rather cultivated in a lab using cells and DNA and what I guess tissue from living animals that they can manipulate and grow meat in a lab. And there are a lot of strong opinions on this. Some people say, hey, it's a great way to get meat protein and not have to kill animals, right? And some people are concerned about the environmental impacts of large-scale farming and ranching and are in favor of it for that reason. Whatever it might happen to be. Other people are so totally against this. I would never eat lab-grown meat. And just appalled at the idea. But what about this? Pet food made with lab-grown meat. apparently coming to the United States later this year, cat food made with lab-grown chicken. Meatly claims to have created a cruelty-free faux chicken for your feline friend. Now, it goes on to say a tin of lab-grown food for your cat food, will cost about $1.25. The company claims that this process is more sustainable and also free of hormones and antibiotics regularly found in factory farm meat. The owner of Meatly, Owen Ensor, says we didn't have to raise and kill an animal to feed another animal. We use far less resources with respect to water and land, less greenhouse emissions. We're not tearing down rainforests, polluting rivers and oceans, etc., etc., etc. I actually think that's a great idea. I mean, if you're going to do lab-grown meat, and the idea is to not have to raise and subsequently kill animals, it makes sense to use lab-grown meat in, like, dog and cat food. I don't think my dog, I don't have a cat, but, you know, if you were to do this for dog food, I don't think my dog would care. You know what I mean? I don't think my dog has a strong opinion one way or the other about whether or not the meat in his food comes from a real live actual animal or whether it's grown in a lab. I don't think he cares one way or the other. And that means more meat for me. I mean, let's be honest. That's really what I'm worried about. It's more meat for me. I don't know. I just thought that was a really good idea. I'm all for it. Again, so much of this, you know, I know the reason why they created was environmental concerns, and they're all worried about that. But I'm not so concerned about that as I am. It just makes sense. More for me. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Monday morning started.
I'm Jay Fox on the Ohio News Network. Republican Senator J.D. Vance is a resident of Cincinnati and a native of Butler County. He graduated from Middletown High School and then served in the Marines in the war in Iraq. He led a group of younger Republicans who opposed further engaging financially on behalf of Ukraine in their war with Russia. His views were shared by former U.S. President Donald Trump, who Vance has endorsed. Is he the choice to be Trump's running mate? So far, no announcement has been made, but the senator said it would be an honor. He also said his priority is serving Ohio. The Columbus woman charged with murdering her 8-year-old son is behind bars. Colin Dorsey with ONN affiliate WBNS-TV has more.
LaShonda Wilder and her girlfriend Jonna Lowe turned themselves in. Police say LaShonda Wilder killed her son Martonio before reporting him missing. And police had been looking for them since they left their home when police brought in a cadaver dog to look for Martonio. His body was then found in the attic inside a trash bag.
Former Cleveland Cavaliers head coach J.B. Bickerstaff has been hired by the Detroit Pistons. The Pistons are Central Division rivals of the Cavs. The coach was fired from Cleveland after 4 years when the Cavs lost to the Boston Celtics in the second round of this year's NBA playoffs and was replaced by Kenny Atkinson. For more state news, go to onnradio.com. For the Ohio News Network, I'm Jay Fox.
Well, summer is in full swing. We've already been blessed or cursed, depending on how you look at it, with some very hot weather, which means swimming pools are extremely popular places to be. But before you jump in, we have some reminders about being water smart this season from Connie Harvey, Director of Aquatics and Centennial Programs at the American Red Cross. Connie, what does that mean to be water smart this summer?
Being water smart is a combination of things. It starts with knowing how to prevent drowning from happening. It is having at least a basic set of swimming skills, and it's knowing how to respond to an emergency. And this is true for everyone, but it's especially true for children. So there are critical layers of protection that you can employ to help here. Number one is prevent unsupervised access to water. Another is to provide constant active adult supervision to any children who are in or near the water, and it's knowing how to swim. In fact, research shows that for children who participate in formal water safety and swim lessons, it can reduce the risk of drowning by up to 88% for 1 to 4 year olds.
Hmm.
But as a community, we all have a role here to play in helping keep those we love safe and on and around the water.
So let's start with the safety tips. What are some of the things that families and individuals should remember around the water in order to stay safe?
So here are a few critical water safety tips that I like to emphasize. Never swim alone. And this applies to adult, teens, young children, and wherever possible, swim in areas where lifeguards are on duty. Another tip is when you're with a group, designate a water watcher. It is really important that there's somebody who is always keeping their eyes on the kids, the family members, the people that they brought to the water. So designate a water watcher who their only job at that point in time is to watch the activity that's going on in the water. And they should do so without distraction. No conversations, no scrolling on their phones, no reading a book, anything like that.
So kind of like a de facto lifeguard.
Yeah, absolutely. And even if lifeguards are on duty, it's important that, you know, with the group that you're in, that you have a designated water watcher who is really focusing on the people in your group. So it's just another really strong layer of protection. Another important aspect of water safety is use of life jackets. And these should be U.S. Coast Guard approved and worn by those who are non-swimmers, like very young children, as well as weak or inexperienced swimmers. And certainly anybody who is on a boat should wear a U.S. Coast Guard approved life jacket. We also teach a concept called reach or throw, don't go. And this means that you should use an object to help reach out to somebody or throw to somebody, shout at them to grab on, and then it can help them get to safety without putting yourself in danger as well. And we teach these concepts and others through our dry land water safety program for kids. Excuse me. And it is called Longfellow's Whale Tales. And WHALE is an acronym for Water Habits Are Learned Early. This is a free dry land water safety program that can be accessed through redcross.org/water safety, where anybody who can orient to the materials can teach this to groups. But also any families can access this material and have these conversations themselves about water safety with their kids. And you can access that through redcross.org/water safety for kids.
Very important stuff there. Some great resources. Now, most of the time we would be talking about public swimming pools, commercial pools, water parks. You mentioned, you know, maybe a lake, or if we're boating, all of those types of things. But backyard pools are becoming increasingly popular. Are there any specific tips for pools at home?
Yeah, this is a very important question. Most drowning deaths of young children happen at home in residential pools during non-swim time, meaning they weren't supposed to be swimming at all. So a very important, and this is really universal around any kind of water, but especially when you have a home pool, that you should teach kids to ask for and get permission from an adult who is going to be there supervising them whenever they are in or near the water. Specifically to home pools, there should be four-sided fencing around that pool to serve as a barrier to prevent access. This should have a self-closing, self-latching gate where the latch itself is outside of the reach of a young child. And make certain to have appropriate safety equipment. So this includes things like the reaching pole or a ring buoy with a line attached, so you can do that reaching or throwing assist. But it also includes having a cell phone or a telephone by the pool so that you are able to make a call to 911 without any interruption and without leaving any of the activity at the water. Also have things like life jackets and a first aid kit. So again, you have what you need by the pool without leaving anybody unattended.
You mentioned the education component, another big part of being water smart. You referenced the online resources. Are there other water safety or swimming lessons, Red Cross programs people should know about?
Absolutely. So each year, about 2.5 million people learn to swim and get water safety education through the American Red Cross. And this happens through our Red Cross training providers throughout the United States. You can find out if you've got Red Cross programming in your area by calling the aquatics facility nearby and asking for Red Cross swimming lessons. We're virtually in every city and throughout the United States. But in addition to our Longfellow Whale Tails program that I talked about and our swim lessons and water safety program, we are really proud of our Aquatic Centennial campaign, where we are working with providers throughout the U.S. in communities where the drowning rate or numbers of drownings are high. And we are working with them, and our aim is to reduce drowning rates in these communities. And we are doing that by making swimming lessons and water safety programming, as well as things like junior lifeguarding, and swim instructor training. We're working to make that available, accessible, and affordable. So we encourage everybody to get involved, learn how to swim, learn about water safety, and even think down the road about becoming lifeguards and swim instructors, because those are so very important to what we call our ecosystem of water safety.
Absolutely. And then real quickly, you mentioned knowing what to do if something were to happen. Obviously, we want to prevent accidents from taking place. We don't want to think about an emergency happening, but what do we do to respond if there is an emergency?
So this is where so many of the prevention things come into play. So think ahead and plan for it to help prevent and be in a place where there is somebody to help respond to that aquatic emergency, such as having a lifeguard or a team of lifeguards on duty. But, you know, the first step is being able to recognize the fact that there is a problem. And that's where this close active adult supervision comes into play, so that they can identify something before it gets beyond their capability. But then also knowing how to reach or throw so you can help somebody get back to safety. In the event that there is a more serious incident, it is really important for people to know CPR. And when we're talking about drowning incidents, or in children where it's more likely to be a breathing-related incident, it's important that they have full CPR as quickly as possible. And that's that combination of chest compressions and breath. And people can find access to this type of training at redcross.org.
Again, you got to respect it. I mean, we all love to get in and cool off and play around in the water, but you got to respect it because there are so many preventable accidents that happen every year. Connie Harvey, again, is Director of Aquatics and Centennial Programs at the American Red Cross. Mention again the website where folks can get those resources for more information.
redcross.org/water safety.
Connie, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much, and stay safe.
So piggybacking on our conversation with Connie Harvey from the National Red Cross just a moment ago about their water safety programs, resources, and advice, Todd James of the North Central Ohio chapter of the American Red Cross is with us in the studio this morning. It's a Red Cross morning.
Well, not a bad morning. I like those kind of mornings.
But so many things, and while we're on the subject of staying safe during the holiday week, the 4th of July, we mentioned water safety. There are so many things, you know, this time of year that can present dangers, and we would be remiss if we didn't talk about the importance of fireworks safety, because they are legal now.
Yes, they are, but no, you're extremely... There are, of course, very obvious, I think, safety precautions that need to be taken, and you hear about those a lot. And I encourage everyone, if you're going to be around fireworks, you know, do it safely. Also, if you are going to be the one, now that they are legal in Ohio, and you're going to be setting off fireworks, now that's great. I love fireworks. Yeah. I have since I was a kid, no doubt about it.
We all do.
But you got to do it right. You got to do it safely. Mm. You know, take the steps. Make sure you're watching out for you, your family, your friends, your spectators, the folks who are watching you, you know, came to have a good time on the 4th of July. We want it to be a good time on the 4th of July.
Especially being careful around the kids.
Yes.
And not letting the kids play with the fireworks. Nothing makes me more nervous than seeing kids run around with those sparklers in their hands.
It's very tempting. You're out there and you're setting off the fireworks and everyone's having a great time. It's like, Daddy, can I light one? Sure, here you go. You might want to think twice about that. I know, it's fun. Again, as a kid,
we loved it. We did it when we were kids. You know what? We shouldn't have been doing it either.
Yeah.
Those things burn at like 1,700 degrees.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're miniature explosives when it gets right down to it. And unfortunately, there are a lot of injuries and accidents that happen with them every year. We don't want that to happen to anyone here. So enjoy them. Have fun. Just be careful doing it.
And, of course, taking the precautions of, having a water bucket handy or having a water source handy to douse the fireworks.
Having a first aid kit handy on hand. Somebody that's been through a first aid course and knows how to use the first aid kit.
Right.
You know, exactly. Just make sure that you are ready. So if something happens, number one, you're taking all the steps to prevent any accidents from happening. But if something does happen, you've got somebody standing by who is trained and knows what to do, which is a great segue into why we're here today.
Exactly.
Thank you.
And that is the Heroes Award to really recognize, as we were saying a little bit earlier, if you know someone who has had the courage, had the compassion to step in and help someone in an emergency situation, not for the recognition, but just because it's the right thing to do, this is the opportunity to give them that recognition.
Exactly. The Red Cross of North Central Ohio Hero Awards, this is a new event for us, but I think it's going to quickly become an annual signature event for us. Something that a lot of Red Cross chapters across the country have done, and when we were looking at wanting to relaunch a special event in the area to do something, we really wanted something that had a strong mission impact focus, and I can't think of anything that does more than recognizing people who step in when needed to help save lives and help people that are in times of emergency. And that's what we're looking for. We're looking for the stories of folks in our communities who were there at the right time, knew what to do, and did it. Could be that somebody was choking in a restaurant and they stepped in, they gave the back blows, they gave the abdominal thrust, the case, everything was okay.
Yeah.
Somebody who stepped in and performed CPR, I'm doing some detective work, so I'm calling on all my detectives to help me out here. The story that we've gotten is around the end of April, apparently, there was someone who had a cardiac event while having breakfast up at Cafe Marie's, up at Scrambler's.
Oh, wow.
And some folks who were in the restaurant stepped in and started performing life-saving measures until the EMTs can get there. We're looking for those folks. Nobody got their name. And that's what we're talking about. The folks that do this, like you said, aren't doing it for recognition. Half the time, we can't find them because they don't stick around and say, hey, I did this.
Yeah.
They do it and they move on with their day.
Actually, that was one of the questions that I was going to ask. What if we witnessed something and said, this is somebody who really needs to be recognized, but I didn't get their name. I have no idea who they are.
You know, if you've got a Scrambler story, if you've got a story like that, reach out to me. Let me know, and we'll try to do a little detective work. It might be that somebody else knew who it was, or if you were the person who they helped save and you know who they were. So if you know who the folks were that stepped in and performed life-saving measures up there at Scrambler Marie's towards the end of April, please, we want to talk to them. Please let me know. Give me a call or give them a call. Say, is it okay if I tell the Red Cross what you did?
Yeah, maybe. Obviously, you can harness the power of social media. We know how well that's worked in the past to find people. Yeah, but the key is you got to know about the
The nomination. And if you do know a story, if you know the details, we have an online nomination portal. It's at redcross.org/NOH Heroes. That's for Northern Ohio. So redcross.org/NOH Heroes. And you go in there and nominate someone. You write out everything you know about the story, who did it, where it happened, and everything. And we have a team that, we do our due diligence. We look into all of these, make sure we get all our facts right. And then we'll have a committee of volunteers and folks get together August 1st. So we've got about a month to get these stories in. On August 1st, we're going to look through all the nominations. And the committee will select four or five that we're going to recognize then in October at a special luncheon. Now, we're talking about community heroes here, but I also want to say this does also include our first responders. Now, honestly, we all know they put their lives on the line every day for us, but they also often will go above and beyond
exactly.
the call of duty.
Yeah.
And we want those stories also. So for any of you out there who are in our law enforcement, firefighting,
maybe
rescue, whatever it is,
something.
Yeah. So if you know of a story like that, we would like to know about it. If you go to redcross.org/NOH heroes, you can send us all the information or just call me up at my office, send me an email, whatever. I'm pretty easy to find. I think most people know by now. I'm out there a lot. So we want to hear these stories. And then in October, we're going to have a really nice luncheon. Our partners and supporters out at the Hilton are providing their ballroom for us. And we're going to have a nice luncheon, bring the award winners and their families, the folks who they help save in and
That's
recognize
awesome.
Them and say thanks for stepping up when the community and when your neighbors needed you.
Yeah, that is all kinds of awesome. And again, you made a good point. You know, it could be something that you have witnessed. It could be that you were the recipient
yeah.
of one of those acts of heroism, and want to recognize the person who stepped up because we have these stories in every community. We're not going to be, there's no shortage of these stories.
Exactly.
Just need to find out who they are and give them the recognition they're due.
Normally, and I think this will become an annual event for us, but since this is the first one, we wanted to kind of open the window up a little wider. So what we're looking for is incidents that would have occurred anytime in calendar year 2023 or this first half of 2024. So
okay.
from January 1st, 2023 to now. If you know of a story like this that you think definitely is something we need to know about, let us know.
And you mentioned that the deadline, you need to have these stories by the end of this month.
Yeah, August 1st is when our committee is getting together to start reviewing all of the nominations and select our honorees.
All right, very good. Todd James with the North Central Ohio chapter of the American Red Cross talking about their Hero Awards. We've got a link on our webpage for more information at goodmornings.net. Real quickly, we were talking about safety and safety around fireworks and water safety. A lot of people traveling this week, and a reminder, we usually talk about it in the wintertime, making sure that we have all the supplies that we're going to need to stay safe on the road. But there are things that we can do and should do in the summertime
Much. Yeah. You should always, year round, I think, have a little kit in your car with emergency supplies this time of year. Definitely some water. But you need to be ready wherever you are. The other thing I would say is, please, if you haven't yet downloaded the Red Cross Emergency app, it's a free app. Put it on your phone, and anywhere you are, if there are any types of weather emergencies or something you need to know, you're going to get alerts because we're going to follow you. We're going on your trip with you to keep you safe. So we'll let you know. I just heard.
Going to follow you, not in a creepy way.
Yeah, I mean, I just heard there was like a tsunami-like event in Holland, Michigan. Now, who would be ready for a tsunami in Holland?
Exactly.
But
it's
a little weird out there nowadays.
Exactly.
If you go to redcross.org/prepare, you get a whole list of tips on what to do to prepare you and your family for traveling and for enjoying the summer safely, and then download that free Red Cross emergency app, and you can decide what kind of alerts you want, when you want them, how you want them, but that way we can be with you to keep you safe wherever you are.
Preparation is always the key.
Exactly.
Todd James, the Red Cross, thanks very much for dropping by.
Thank you.
You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM. We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Sometimes, the dumb criminals just make things too easy on law enforcement. I mean, think about it. Law enforcement should be a challenging profession. I mean, if there's no challenge, what's the fun in that? But in this case, a man from Southern California is going to get to spend more than 8 years in prison for sending methamphetamine to Nebraska through the mail. Jose De Jesus Hernandez Castellanos was sentenced earlier this month. Well, this month. Today's 1st of July. So late last month, I guess. Last week is what I should say. He was sentenced for distributing more than 500 grams of meth. A DEA agent on a tip went undercover to investigate a group of individuals suspected of mailing the drugs to Omaha. And so the agent This is a brilliant piece of detective work. And I'm not criticizing the agent. I mean, you know, he did. Sometimes the simplest solution is the way to go, is the best. The agent ordered a pound of meth and received almost 2 pounds in the mail in response. He just placed an order and they sent him the meth. That's all it took. Once Mr. Castellano's prison sentence is complete, he'll have 5 years of supervised release, and probably, I would think, I can imagine this guy getting sentenced. He has 8 years to sit there in jail wondering, where did I go wrong? Where? He just sent it in the mail. And moreover, he sent more than the officer ordered. So, I mean, that's great customer service. But not when you're sending drugs through the mail. Sometimes they just make it too easy. How ironic is it, though, that the best customer service that we have in this country is by drug dealers? He's got more than what he ordered. Doesn't happen in this country very often. Talk about a bad first date. This is a bad first date. A woman in Iowa, Sumaya Thomas, she's 18 years old, got a case of cold feet so bad that she called the cops to try to get out of her date. She had scheduled a rendezvous with a man she had met on a dating app, but when he arrived at her home, she suddenly panicked and called 911. She gave the cops a story about how he was an abusive ex who was threatening to hurt her. According to the report here, when police arrived, they questioned the man only to find out that he was not a jealous ex who was threatening the woman. It was just a first date that had gone horribly wrong before it even started. The man was able to provide text messages between the two of them to prove his story. Ms. Thomas eventually admitted making those false reports because she got cold feet upon meeting the man. First date. She was arrested and charged with 2 counts of submitting a false report and abuse of the 911 system. That was a bad date. But it was a bad date for him, a worse date for her. So sometimes bad dates turn into bad marriages. A millionaire in British in British. A millionaire in British. Let me try that again. Sometimes bad dates turn into bad marriages. A British millionaire, that's what I meant to say, Francis McGurk, allegedly set his own home on fire so his wife couldn't claim it in the divorce. He burned his own mansion to the ground so his wife wouldn't be able to claim it in the divorce. He reportedly locked himself inside and texted his soon-to-be ex-wife that he was about to set the house on fire, assuring her that he would throw the family dog out the window. Well, that's nice. The neighbors called emergency services, and the $1.4 million home only ended up sustaining minor damage. One of the first responders said he heard Mr. McGurk say that he set the house on fire because he didn't want that you-know-what to have everything. Didn't want that witch to have everything, although he didn't use the word witch. You know what I mean? The judge in the case apparently took mercy on Mr. McGurk and did not sentence him to any prison time. But, you know, only minor damage. I'm guessing she's going to get the house. You know, probably going to get it anyway. Let's see. Elsewhere in the broken news, this is one of the most unusual seizures of, I guess you could call this stolen property. More than $1 million of collectible postage stamps seized by federal agents in Seattle during a fraud investigation. Federal prosecutors say the suspects impersonated government agents targeting the elderly and other vulnerable people. They would claim their bank accounts were breached and they needed to send money to protect their bank accounts. And then the crazy part is that the money that they got was used to buy collectible stamps from an auction house. Of all things. Of all things, you know, rob people of their money and use it to buy collectible postage stamps. 28 victims in Washington and across the country in all. Investigators trace more than $1 million to various victims, and they are working to return the money. But to rob all of that money and then buy postage stamps with it. Okay. All right. Our requisite story out of Florida this morning. Always seems like people do really dumb things in Florida. A man is under arrest after allegedly shooting down a Walmart delivery drone he thought was spying on him. Apparently, the whole thing was part of a test for drone deliveries in the area as part of a promotional campaign. There was a crew from the company monitoring the drone, testing it out, when suddenly they heard what sounded like a gunshot. A representative said he saw a man pointing a gun toward the drone and then pulled the trigger. Pointed the gun toward the drone and pulled the trigger when confronted. I'll spit it out here. 72-year-old Dennis Wynn confirmed that he shot down the drone, explaining that he had had experiences with drones flying over his home and believed they were spying on him. He is charged with shooting at an aircraft, criminal mischief, and discharging a firearm on residential property. Okay, and I guess with that, maybe Walmart might want to reevaluate the idea of drone delivery. I would say the test was a failure. And finally, in the broken news this morning, you think that our politics are crazy and messed up. After last week's debate, that seemed like all anyone was talking about over the weekend was how messed up our politics, our elections are. Well, check this out. In Canada, a political candidate, Felix Antoine Hamel, has become the first political candidate in Canadian history, maybe world history, to receive no votes. None. He was on the ballot, didn't receive a single vote, not even from himself. Mr. Hamel was one of 84 candidates who were registered to run in an election in Toronto. Apparently, he, along with many of the others, were only running in order to help create the largest ballot in the country's history. 84 candidates in all in this election. Apparently, this became a big thing. They wanted to make it some people had the idea we want to make it the biggest ballot in history. So they had 84 candidates for this office. I have no idea what the office was, but Mr. Hamel received zero votes. And because he's not a resident of Toronto, where the election is actually being held, he could not even vote for himself. Somebody has to explain to me how somebody who's not a resident of the city could actually run for an office in the city. But apparently that was legal. He could run for the office. He couldn't vote for the office because he's not a resident of Toronto. So he got zero votes. Mr. Hamel said in response to becoming the first person in Canadian history to receive no votes in an election, he spun this like a politician. He said, "I am truly the one unity candidate. Everyone agrees not to vote for me." Now that is a true politician spinning that into a positive. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Hello, I'm Jerry Stewart. Join me here on this station for my annual 4th of July celebration, Fighting for America. You'll hear so many stories of great patriots who helped form our nation and how we have worked to make our America the greatest nation in the world. Join me for stories and music and so much more.
4th of July morning at 10, 1330 WFIN and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Every parent has said it at one time or another, either to themselves or out loud, that kids grow up too fast. It can be hard for mom and dad. And a lot of parents will keep certain mementos from when their kids were younger to remind them of those simple days, right? A new YouGov poll asked parents of adult children what keepsakes of their child's childhood they are hanging on to. And not surprisingly, 95% of parents with adult children say they hold on to old photos when their kids were young. That you would expect, 95%. And they treasure those photos when their kids were small. But, you know those pieces of art that are always hanging on the fridge, regardless of what they look like? 74% of parents say they still have those things from hanging on the refrigerator, still have those tucked away in a box someplace. 74% of parents hang on to those. Another 70% of parents have held on to awards or certificates given to their kids, you know, like for perfect attendance or the honor roll or, you know, first place in the school track and field day, whatever it might happen to be. Let's see here. 57% of parents keep their child's report cards. Now, there is nothing wilder than being an adult and discovering that your kid, that your parents have held on to your report cards from when you were in school. Going back and looking those over from when you were in like third grade. 57% keep their child's report cards. Among the other items parents will not throw out, 57% say they still have a video of their kid as a child. 48% still have their children's school yearbooks. 46% have casts of handprints or footprints that their kids did when they were little. Did you do that? Like in plaster of Paris, a cast of your kid's handprint or footprint. 45% hang on to their children's toys even after they become adults. 35% still have a lock of hair, maybe from that first haircut. 35% have their baby clothes still packed away somewhere. And 29% of parents admit that they still have their kids' baby teeth. Well, I'm okay with all of that until you get to the lock of hair and the baby teeth. That's a little creepy slash disgusting, but that's 29% kids' baby teeth. And while that already may seem like a lot of nostalgia, it turns out that 1/3 of parents, 33% of parents with adult children, wish that they had saved even more mementos. Only 6% wish that they had saved less. I'll tell you what, for me, this is every bit as a tradition on the 4th of July as the fireworks and cooking out or anything else. It is an old-fashioned, all-American 4th of July ice cream social at the Hancock Historical Museum, and Sarah Foltz from the museum is with us. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks. Happy 4th of July,
yes.
And all of that. So continuing the tradition of a big ice cream social after the parade, 4th of July.
Yes, this has become such a loved tradition, and we're not far from the downtown parade route, so it's perfect to just take a walk down Sandusky Street after the parade ends, enjoy an ice cream social, the whole entire museum is open to browse for free admission. And then there's ice cream, of course, from Dietsch's that's available for purchase.
You can't beat that. And this runs from when to when on the 4th?
We do 12 to 2. Okay. So it's just a couple hours to come enjoy our campus. We also have members of the John Hancock chapter, the Sons of the American Revolution. They're coming to do some demonstrations, and it's a real nice time to just give your kiddos some activities to play. We do a lot of patriotic crafts and activities as well.
It's going to be an awful lot of fun. And like I said, I know that my wife and I have made it a tradition that we bicycle down. You know, we just ride our bikes down and have some ice cream and then ride home. And yeah, it's just a great way of spending the 4th of July.
Yes, that's exactly the family tradition we want.
Perfect thing. Perfect thing. By the way, should mention, because there is the chance of rain on the 4th of July, this is a rain or shine event?
This is a rain or shine event, and we do have space inside to be able to sit and enjoy your ice cream just in the event. And our front porch is covered, so we look forward to it no matter what.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the best parts. The front porch is covered, so whether it's hot, whether it's raining, whatever, and just sit out and enjoy some ice cream. Again, on the 4th of July.
So yes.
That is the big thing this week, or this month. There's no brown bag lunch lecture this month, right?
Nope. Yeah. We hold off on that, but we do have a classic movie night this month.
Aha. Uh-huh.
We are keeping with the theme and featuring 1942 Yankee Doodle Dandy on July 19th.
Okay. That's always a treat. If you've never been to a classic movie night, it really is, not only is it a fun movie and all of that, but also you kind of put things into historical context and historical perspective and all of that.
Exactly. I love the sense of community that we have during these events. It starts at 7 o'clock Friday night. It's free to attend, and we always include some extra discussion and Q&A afterwards. So it's BYOB. You can bring your own beverage. We have popcorn available that's complimentary, and it's just a really nice way to spend a Friday evening.
So that is the 19th, you said?
Yep.
Okay. So circle that on the calendar for Yankee Doodle Dandy. What a terrific film that is. And really, those are the two big highlights for the month of July. I know you're already starting to make plans for stuff later on in the season, even into the fall.
Yeah, we kind of intentionally have to keep the summer months a little, just a little bit calmer, because we have to hit the ground running. We have two huge events coming up in September. Believe it or not, the Historic Barn Tour is back. It'll be the first Saturday of September, September 7th.
Okay.
You'll be hearing so much more about that here soon, in addition to the 10th year of Oktoberfest is at the end of September. So the last Saturday of September, we'll be downtown spanning three blocks with all things German heritage.
And I'm guessing, we know how big Oktoberfest has become, and I'm guessing the fact that it is the 10th anniversary means there's probably even more stuff being planned, right?
Exactly. We are really, really excited. We knew this was an extra reason to make it the biggest party and the biggest celebration yet. So.
As if you need more reason to celebrate and make it even bigger. But
why not?
Why not? It's not like we need an excuse, but since we have one, we may as well take advantage of it. Now, the again, we're going to talk more about that when we get a little bit closer. You mentioned the barn tour, which also is coming up in the early fall. When do the tickets go on sale for that?
Those tickets are going to go on sale August 1st. So keep an eye out. You can get those at the museum or on our website. So those will go live August 1st. We have a little bit of time, but that is a really, really cool event. Mark your calendar. You get to tour six different barns. These are all really close together, actually, in the southern part of Hancock County.
Okay.
Learn about the history, learn about the families, and then there's so many extra activities to participate in along the way.
Really is a cool event, and we'll learn more about that next time we have you here, but I wanted to make sure that people know you haven't missed the opportunity to get tickets, because those are not yet on sale. And with respect to Oktoberfest, again, already starting to make plans, do you need folks to help out at this point? Are you looking for volunteers? Are you looking for those who'd be willing to help in one way, shape, or form?
Thank you for asking that. So we will have a volunteer sign up go live here soon, because this is really a community-wide effort. It is essentially the largest one-day event in our area, the largest street festival in downtown Findlay, and it does require so many hands to help. We have a dedicated committee right now that is hitting the ground running, getting all the logistics set, but we will be really relying on our community to help put this on.
Okay, so stay tuned on that as well. And again, 4th of July ice cream social on the 4th from noon to 2, you said?
Yep, you're
right. Noon to 2. We've got a link up for more information on our webpage. And of course, anytime, if you're looking for something to do in the summertime, trip to the museum is always a great way to spend an afternoon.
Yes, I tell people a lot, especially on these really hot summer days. It's a perfect opportunity to explore your local history. There's something for all ages, all interests.
As it turns out, Memory Lane is air conditioned.
Yes.
So at the Hancock Center. What are the hours, by the way, the museum?
We are open Wednesday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and then Sundays 1 to 4 p.m.
All right, very good. Again, Sarah Foltz with us from the Hancock Historical Museum. Thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it, as always. And that will finish up our podcast for today. Thanks to all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, that, of course, goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, remembering those who gave us the freedom to celebrate on the 4th of July, and the Findlay family's dedication to helping veterans at a special retreat in scenic southern Ohio. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.